Hi, I'm Karen Connable. I play Judy and Chucky in Plus One and Mrs. Peacock in Home. And you're listening to the X-Cast.
Welcome to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Sarah Blair, and today my guest is Miss Clara Cook. Clara, happy to be back with you, my dear.
I'm happy to be back with you too, Sarah.
Today we are here to talk about The Walk. It originally aired November 10th, 1995, and this is the seventh episode of season three. This episode was written by John Scheiben, who also penned our favorite Tesos dos Bichos and El Mundo Kira, which I talked about on the podcast, Podwatch with Carl, and one that I really like, Pine Bluff Variant. So that was, he's done a lot of producing and co-writing on different episodes, but those are the ones that are credited exclusively to him. Our director for this episode, one of my favorites, Rob Bowman. I love him. So he has also directed some really great ones. Paperclip, Pusher, Hosey Chunks from Outer Space. Did you know, Clara, he's got 33 episodes directing on the show?
No, I didn't know that. I mean, yeah. I knew that he directed a lot, but I didn't. Yeah. 33 is considerable, so
he's,
though.
That's... Yeah, he's second only behind Kim Manners for number of episodes directed. So that's pretty cool. A little tidbit there. So... we'll see. This X-File is a case where Mulder and Scully investigate a series of suicide attempts and murders related to a case of astral projection. So I'm excited to talk about that with you because I like the subject of astral projection. Out of 10, what would you score this episode?
Well, the X-Files are really good at doing supernatural revenge stories, and I would consider this a supernatural revenge story. I just don't think it's one of their strongest ones, so I would probably give it 4 or 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
I would say it's bordering between 4 or 5. And maybe by the end of this podcast, I'll know which one.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say 4-ish. So about the same. On IMDb, the score is 7.4.
What?
Uh-huh. Out of 2,249 votes. I feel like that's high. I think maybe people got a little trigger happy there. But, yeah. Shall we dig in and discuss this episode in excruciating detail? So, our first scene, we open with a man in a VA hospital who is being interviewed by a doctor, and he is trying to commit suicide, which is tragic and awful. And then when the doctor leaves to go get him some medicine to help him rest, he tries again in a horrific, horrible, awful way. He puts weights in his pockets, and I don't know where he got pockets on his hospital robe, but okay, we're going to go with it. So then he, like, turns on the boiling water in the therapy room, and I don't know why it's even possible to go as high as it does. Like, why would you need hydrotherapy to get up to 200 degrees? Like, why is that even a thing that could happen? I don't know. Maybe in the 90s they didn't have the safety precautions that we have now, but he turns the temperature way up to boiling and hops right in and boils himself, tries to boil himself to death. But guess what happens? The apparition that he's been saying that he saw shows up and unlocks the door and lets the firemen in. They got there like super mega fast. And then he magically comes back to life and says, he just won't let me die. So that's our opening.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
It's a pretty horrible teaser, to be honest. I mean, it's very effective, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, the idea of being boiled alive, or almost boiled alive, is pretty horrific. The special effects are really good. So, like, the burns and the skeeling, like, skin peeling off. Mm-hmm. The skin peeling off is really gross. Like, I was like, I mean, I knew it was, you know, movie makeup, but I still was like, ugh.
It looks really real.
Yeah, I even actually said out loud, ugh.
Yeah, me too.
I've seen it several times, so I knew it was coming. Yeah. The hydrotherapy room has, like, gym equipment and stuff. Uh-huh. It is probably the most sinister therapy room that I've ever seen. It basically looks like, I just don't think anyone would be comfortable walking on a treadmill in that room.
No.
Or sitting in a bath, or, do you know what I mean? It looks like the boiler room or something.
It's like a chicken processing plant or something. Like,
it's like the therapy room from hell.
This is where we boil the people who don't behave. I agree with you. It's terrible. So I felt like it was very horrifying, which is appropriate for the X-Files, for sure. But, yeah. I did want to know, it did do its job of making me want to know what in the world is going on here. So at least it accomplished that. But that's about it, I suppose.
I think one of the major problems of this episode is that the deaths are horrific, but the reactions to the deaths are quite muted.
Yes.
And so part of the problem is that if you're going to have a really horrific death or a really horrific scene where someone's going to die in a really horrible way, mm-hmm. you've got to have sort of like an equally balanced out reaction to it in the next scene.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same with this one. And this is the first example of like a really bad situation. Mm-hmm. And then the scenes that follow this immediately.
Yeah. I did feel like, you know, the nurse reacted pretty well. She's kind of like appropriately disgusted and horrified when she looked down at him. She's like, oh, yeah. I mean, can you, like, I'm sure the physical effects and the makeup helped a lot. Because you could imagine that pretty easily. So I think that probably helped her acting a little bit. But yeah, that was pretty gross. And then, you know, like you said, the reactions. But also, I felt like, we'll get into it for sure. I want to talk about that when the scene comes up. But yeah, like the justification for the being so gruesome and awful, I felt like was a little bit too vague for my taste. I would have liked a little bit more. We just get about a minute of talking about that, so I think it would have been better to establish a little bit something a little bit more solid there. So we'll talk about that for sure. So in our next scene after the credits, we see Willie Garçon, who plays Roach, and he comes into this. He was also in the Goldberg Variation. I really liked his character in that episode. He goes into this group therapy session with a group of amputees at this VA hospital, and we meet this guy Rappo, who, I'm sorry, but he's kind of an asshole. Maybe I'm not sorry about that, but he's really rude and mean and horrible person, which I guess, you know, I would probably have a lot of bitterness there too, so maybe I don't blame him for that, but I think he could be a little bit nicer. I don't know. What do you think, Clara?
I really like the way the therapy scene is filmed. I think it's really nicely filmed, like sort of like all kind of misty, everyone in mm-hmm. wheelchairs and shadowed silhouettes and the light from the window coming in. I thought that was really effective. And I kind of like what the guy's saying about how he dreams about imagining like his you know, he and his son and his little daughter being able to walk across the grass, and he's dreaming about having legs. But I agree with you. Rappo is really unpleasant character. I mean, he's quite a flawed character, and we'll go on to talk about that. But I did think it was nice to see a little bit a character who is angry at being disabled, because mm-hmm. there is a stereotype you see in movies and TVs of disabled people being these noble, saintly characters, mm-hmm. you know, who are, I don't know, very, very brave despite their circumstances.
Right.
And years ago, I read an article written by someone who was disabled in a car accident. As a result of a car accident. And she was saying a considerable time after that, she was really angry that she'd been disabled. And she and everyone was sort of expecting her to be brave and sort of get on with it. And of course, she did eventually go on to live a successful life as a disabled person. She said for quite a percentage of time she was actually really angry and pissed off that this had happened to her, that it was just bad luck, and everyone was expecting her not to, to sort of like squash down her anger and not be upset about it. And she sort of said that, well, that's really unfair. Like, why should I have to be this saintly figure just because this bad thing happened to me? So I can see, so I think it's nice actually to see somebody mm-hmm. who's disabled be angry at their condition. And I think being a quadriplegic would be pretty horrific.
Oh, yeah.
It is something that you would definitely be very upset about. But you're right. He's really nasty to everyone else in the therapy group. And that's mean, isn't
yeah.
it? Because everyone else in the therapy group is dealing with the same situation, really, mm-hmm. as he is.
I definitely agree with you that, like, it's great to see, you know, the real feelings. And, you know, that's what group session is for. So it's great that he's letting that come out and everything, but he doesn't have to be mean to everyone else. So, yeah. It just, and like you said, he's kind of a flawed character. So, I feel like overall, just in general in this episode, there was a lot that could have been, no pun intended, fleshed out a little bit. Sorry, Colonel Stans.
Before that, Mulder and Scully are interviewing Colonel... And I like how they're working in sync. Like, they're both, like, she writes on the notepad that she gives to him as Colonel Stans talking, like, you know, shell shock and PTSD. Mm-hmm. And he looks at the, she just hands him the pad, he looks at the pad. Like, they're kind of working in sync. But again, they're very unsympathetic to Colonel Stans. There he is sitting there, all kind of,
right?
You know, kind of bandaged up with all his facial burns and everything. And they're like, you know, like, oh, well.
Yeah, just like literally writing him off as, you know, I thought that was a little bit insensitive to Scully. But I feel like she, maybe her attitude in that scene was more to the fact that she, I feel like she was sort of had this righteous anger towards the army. And she was accusing, you know, mentioned to Mulder that the Gulf War syndrome, and she thinks that, I think her anger and not, or I guess detachment comes from her being upset that she thinks this is a cover up from the army. And, you know, she's a Navy kid, so maybe there's a little bit of tension there between the army and the Navy. That's what she thinks happened, is that they're all suffering from Gulf War syndrome. And this is not the first victim who has seen an apparition before they've tried to commit suicide. There was another guy before this called Aiklin who killed himself in a wood chipper. So that was super duper. I guess, you know, if you really, really want to get the job done, that's what you do. And... not to sound insensitive, that sounded really awful, I'm sorry. But yeah, his wife and children...
It's a fictional death.
Yeah, it's true. His wife and children were also killed in a fire, just like Colonel Stans' wife and children were. So, and both claimed that they had this invisible force insisting that they wouldn't let him die. So, and then they go into to investigate the room where this... happened, and Mulder wonders why the one entrance to the room is left open. If he really wanted to kill himself, why did he leave it open? Which he did not. We saw the spectral astral projection thing open it in the opening scene. So, yeah, at least Mulder noticed that.
Well, there's also a scene with Captain Janet Draper,
mm-hmm.
who's like a female captain in the army, which is, it's exciting to see a female captain in the army because I don't mm-hmm. think you see that anywhere else in the X-Files. And she goes head to head with Scully, and like she kind of comes in, doesn't she? She's sort of lecturing Mulder and Scully about how this is against procedural regulations and this is like totally inappropriate. And just the look that Mulder and Scully give her, I'm thinking, oh, you poor lady, you have no idea who you're dealing with. Like, since when have Mulder Scully cared about procedures and regulations? Like, this is gonna blow that stuff down. And then Scully, like, is like going head to head with her. Scully just, Mulder just like sort of sits back on his heels,
right?
And Scully's just like just takes Janet Draper to task, and then goes on and takes the colonel to task, and then, or the general, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, she's
got this, man. She knows how to deal with these people.
Lay down the law.
Yeah, absolutely. That was nice to see Scully putting down her foot. And yeah, I liked that too. So yeah. Do you think there was something going on with Captain Draper and Callahan?
What, the general?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, quite possibly. Or maybe there's something going on for her. She was, I mean, I don't really understand why, because he's basically a plank of wood walking around. He's not exactly the most exciting personality.
No emotion.
I really struggled with him. And as I was watching, I was like, this acting, I mean, I don't know whether he's directed like this or he's just a bad actor. Sorry, guy. But just, he's so deadpan. He could almost be dead. Do you know?
Right?
Like, he's just walking around like a brick wall.
Exactly. Even when he gets that creepy message on the answering machine, he's, you know, doesn't freak out or anything. He's just like, I got this message. It's not the first time it's happened. And you're like, dude, that was a creepy message. Come on. If I heard that coming out of my answering machine, I would pee my pants.
And if he cared about Janet Draper, he sure hid it well when, like, she died.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you mean her death was suspicious? Or whatever he said. He says something like, you mean that she was killed? And Scully and Mulder both think that she was possibly drowned, like, deliberately murdered. And he's like, oh, okay.
I think the most emotion he showed in the whole episode was when he told her to go home and relax.
Yeah.
Go home, little girl, relax. Take it easy. And it's 10:30 at night. Why is she swimming laps at 10:30 at night? I guess you got to get your laps in when you can. I don't know.
He's very good at dismissing women, isn't he? Like,
yeah.
Like, he sort of tries to dismiss Scully, and Scully's like, I'm not having any of that shit. But he dismisses his subordinate.
Mm-hmm.
He dismisses his wife several times.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when she's in that scene where she's like, oh, we'll go on to talk about it. But the scene where she's very upset because she thinks that somebody has been in the house. And he's like, just go upstairs.
They're there, dear.
Yeah. I mean, it's not remotely reassuring. And then he's completely fine with it. He's like, oh, someone's been in the house and frightening my wife. Well, oh, well.
Well, see, and you can't even dismiss it as him being a military man and a stoic, you know, suck it up kind of guy, because I would imagine that kind of person would be really upset that someone came onto their turf and into their home. You know, like, that type of personality would be like, not on my house, you know, not on my watch in my house. This is personal now. And that, you know, that's how I would guess that type of person would react. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not a military person, so that's just a wild guess on my part. But typically you would think that they would be more territorial about their own home and their own property. So I don't know.
So when aliens come to the United States, right, to colonize the United States, this general will just stand aside and let them invade. Mulder's right. Probably looking at this guy and thinking, this guy's going to be no help in the coming apocalypse. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Can't even defend his own home.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Callahan, get it together, dude. So, so he's not apparently afraid of astral projection. He's not afraid of an actual physical intruder who leaves footprints in the sandbox, which I liked the foreshadowing there, by the way, for the later scene, even though it's a horrible scene and I don't like that scene and I skipped it. But yeah, the sandbox. We established the sandbox. Way to go, Rob Bowman. Nice foreshadowing. So yeah, then Draper gets drowned in the pool. Like, the shadow thing on the ceiling would have freaked my freak out. Like, that, if nothing else, there are some scary moments in this episode, which I appreciate. And that was one of them. Drowning is a horrible way to go. But drowning in boiling water, I think, would be worse.
Yeah, I think the first scene is the most horrific. But there is something, I mean, for me personally, I think there's something quite physically vulnerable about being in a pool.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think this is quite a common thing for most people. You know, you're wearing a bathing suit, especially if the pool's, like, really big. You can't see into the corners of the pool necessarily. And like, I agree with you, when she's swimming on her back and she can see the shadow in the ceiling kind of coming after her, I just think, I think that scene would really speak to like the audience, like any audience who's ever been in a pool,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Absolutely.
There's probably a lot of people.
I don't like swimming. I don't swim alone. Even at the gym, when there's nobody in the pool, but you know, there's cameras watching and there's like people around, but that freaks me out. I don't like being alone
in
a pool.
I like to have people there. Yeah.
But one thing that I, you know, the shadow, if he's an astral projection, he would have to have a physical form to make a shadow, correct? Do ghosts make shadows?
But isn't he supposed to have a physical form? Because when he runs through the steam at the end of the episode, you can kind of see the steam going around his body. Like, that's how they see his...
But you can also see through it, though, right?
Yeah, that's true. He has to have some sort of physical presence, yeah. Otherwise he can't close doors and push things and...
Yeah.
I mean, some of it doesn't make much sense.
But
like,
then
she
sees the shadow, but she doesn't see him in the pool, and she, like, looks around.
And you would think that his movement in the pool would create some sort of movement in the water.
Yes.
Like a ripple or a wave or something.
Right. Yeah. But no, he just yanks her down. So that bothered me. That's being really nitpicky, though. But that's what we're here to do. So after we get our non-reaction from our favorite Callahan man, you know, Mulder and Scully are like, hey, dude. Then we go to Callahan's house and see his son playing on the floor, and the mail comes, which was also a nice tie-in there. And then this person enters the house, grabs the mail, runs out the door, and the kid freaks out, rightfully so. The kid had the best reaction of everybody in the whole show. It's like, mom, there's somebody in the house. Like, he was the best one. He nailed it. And we find out that it was Roach stealing the mail from the house. And he goes to talk to Rappo about it. And we find out they were kind of, were they in a unit together? And he blames Roach for putting him, like, he blames Roach for losing his limbs. But if he blames Roach directly, and Roach is the only one he actually knows personally. There's no personal connection to any of these other people, which really bothers me. And so he actually blames Roach for that. But he hasn't killed Roach yet. You would think that would be the first person he'd go after. But no, he's using him, so I guess he needs him. But
yeah, in this scene, he's also really nasty to the nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Who's like taking his blood or whatever. And I just think at this point he starts to become a character who, I mean, he's quite unsympathetic to begin with, because like you said, he's really unpleasant to the people doing therapy with him in the therapy group. But he becomes, I would say, an unredeemable character by this point, because he's just nasty to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, he's nasty to Roach and he threatens Roach, and then he's nasty to the nurse who is taking his blood, and there's like no reason for him to be nasty to the nurse, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there's no reason for him to be nasty to the staff at the hospital who are like taking care of everybody,
right?
Like, he's just someone who's filled with hate, mm-hmm. basically hate for everybody and hate for the world.
Yeah,
probably hate for himself as well, actually. But I mean, I like it, like, I mean, we'll talk about it, I suppose, but like, I like it when Mulder kind of calls him on his attitude, because he blames Roach for his disability. But then, and I suppose somehow Roach could have caused it by being in a certain place, or he needed his help for this or whatever. And there could be some action of Roach that indirectly
resulted
in him
becoming. Yeah, but we never get that. So that bothered me.
We never get that, yeah.
I
think, but also, I mean, he is a soldier.
Right.
And not that I'm unsympathetic to veterans, you know, but he is a soldier and he went to war and he was injured as a result of war. I mean, I'm not sure what he thought war was going to be like. Like, a lot of people, well, I would say most people come back from war scarred in some way. It's war, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
He shouldn't be so annoyed at the fellow soldiers. He keeps talking about soldiers who didn't come back. You know, the soldiers came back in body bags, the soldiers who came
right.
back injured. But then those are some of the soldiers around him in the hospital, and he treats them all really badly.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's what I wrote. I was like, this is too vague. He doesn't say, like, I think it would have helped to have a specific person, like, you know, if there was somebody else in the unit that got killed in whatever accident happened or whatever ambush, like, we don't even know what happened. So not knowing that gives us no basis to analyze this from, because it's all so vague. It's like, oh, this terrible thing happened. Like, okay, well, that sucks. Like, war is a terrible thing, and a lot of people die and get hurt, and that's the nature of it. So how, unless we have a specific event to base this off of, we have no way to, like, figure out where he's coming from or, you know, why he's this way. So it's a very flawed way to present a character, because, you know, we need more than that to identify with, you know. Like, if I just had one piece of something that could give me some sympathy or some empathy for this guy, I would be like, well, he's not that much of an asshole. But, you know, it's hard to, because the way he treats everybody is so horrible and so mean that it's hard to have any kind of identifying, like, thing to, you know, get, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
Like, if somebody, like, that he'd cared about, who he, like, one of his, like, fellow soldiers that he'd cared about had died in the accident or the ambush that had caused him to lose his arms and legs, then I think it would be more of a believable story. Or if, as a result of him losing his arms and legs, he lost, I don't know, a family member, or just that it was actually, like you said, the actual event was a case of, like, massive commandeering by a general. You know, if it, like, a general or somebody in charge had made a really big military mistake,
right,
and that had resulted in him losing his arms and legs and his whole platoon being killed, then that would, I could see why he would go after authority. But he's just angry at people because there was a war and it didn't go well for him.
Right, exactly.
And I'm like, dude, it didn't go well for anybody in this hospital. Exactly. The war went badly for everyone.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's just, it's a little bit too vague for me to really get into that storyline. I wish I had more there. And it wouldn't even take much, a sentence here or there. Just a mention of, like you said, the whole platoon got wiped out. And, you know, even if he blamed himself a little bit, it would be, go a long way to justifying his anger and his bitterness. But no, we never got that. So, yeah, and then Mulder and Scully go to arrest Roach. What's with the ants in the drawer? Like, why? I didn't really understand the purpose of the ants, other than just, like, maybe he dumped them in the drawer or something, and I don't know. It was just weird.
That was very strange. I also thought that as well. I was like, why are they showing us this? I wondered if they were just trying to show us that Roach wasn't very, very well, because he's not very, he's like, his sink is piled with dishes. Like, he's not taking care of himself. But then I was like, why don't they need us to know that? Because Roach dies very shortly afterwards.
Yeah. So that doesn't make sense. I wonder if there was something in there that maybe got cut out for time or something.
Willie Garson, who plays Roach freely, is rather wasted in this episode. He's good actor. He's better than General Callahan. He's better actor, and yet he gets less screen time. And so when he's quickly dispatched, I'm like, oh no.
I know. Yeah.
Willie.
At least he gets to come back. He gets reincarnated in the Goldberg variation, so it's good. Yeah, and then so he leaves the fingerprints on the door at the Callahan house. He keeps all the mail for them to find. Like, what a genius we're working with here. Yeah, and then we get the scene where Callahan's son gets buried in the sandpit, which is horrible, and I skipped that part because I have my own boy who loves to play in the dirt, and I didn't like that. So, do you have any thoughts on that scene other than it's awful?
More just that it's a particularly bad way to die.
Yeah, especially for little kids. That's horrible.
Yeah, it's really horrible. And, it's a very nightmarish, image, I think, having the sand pile up on him. And also, like at the very end with his little hand sticking out of the sand. And I was glad to see that the soldier who was guarding the house was particularly horrified.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, at least someone looks horrified at the idea of somebody dying. Someone's horrified by this. I was thinking though, I mean, maybe if I am ever a parent, maybe I'll just be like a really paranoid parent. But I was thinking when I saw him like digging, and I knew it was going to happen in which episode before, but I saw him digging in the sandpit. I was thinking if I was his mother, I would come and like smooth down some of those walls.
I mean,
because even if there wasn't an evil astral projection that's going to come and bury my son in sand, it's quite possible the sand could fall in anyway.
Well, not only that, but this is just my own personal thoughts. If someone had been in my house, first of all, I would not even be in my house, whether I had a guard or not. Like, I don't care. I'm not going to be there. I'm going to go to a hotel for a while till this blows over. Take my kid with me. We're out of here. I'm going to go stay with mom for a while, guys. Yeah, I wouldn't let my kid play outside alone. I don't care if he's got a guard out front or wherever the guard, I don't know, I skipped that part, so I didn't see where the guard actually was. Clearly he was not watching the child, if he was able to get buried like that. So yeah, you don't let your kids out of your sight. Sorry, you just, that's me. I don't, you know, as long as I know they're in my house is always locked up.
She's been dismissed by her husband, General Callahan. He's like, there's someone who's invaded the house. You know, I'm really frightened. I'm like, our son is crying upstairs. And he's like, off you go, little lady. Off you go.
I know.
Don't worry. I don't even think he says, don't worry. He says, these people are from the FBI. And she looks at Mulder and Scully like they're going to protect us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, Mulder and Scully kind of look blankly back at her like, we're not going to protect you. And then, and then he's like, off you go. And then, like, yeah, you're right. And then the next scene is, or next scenes, a few scenes after that, her son's playing outdoors in a sandpit that's obviously a death trap.
I mean...
And he's being watched by some random soldier.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not trying to be judgy mom or anything. Because, like, I don't know. Letting my kids play outside alone freaks me out. That just is a personal thing for me, I guess. But, yeah. Like, you never know who could walk up and just snatch them or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I live in a city and I grew up in a city and we grew up on quite a main road.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents just couldn't let us play outside or couldn't let me play outside. When I started going to the park on my own, I was probably, I would say, fairly old. But before that, my parents took me to the park and they would sit there on a bench and watch me play.
Yeah.
I think... In recent years, people have become more concerned. I think maybe in the past, mm-hmm. people let their kids play outside a lot more. But
yeah, well, plus, I wonder if they were living on a military base, though, because he's a general. I don't know where generals live.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you think?
But even so, I mean, yeah, they probably are living on a military base. But even so, I mean, I have friends that have small kids now, and when their kids are in the garden, they're in the kitchen looking out the window watching their kids.
Exactly.
And the door's open.
Yep.
And the kids aren't that far.
Yep.
Or they're out in the garden with a cup of tea watching the kids play.
Yeah.
Because kids can hurt themselves even if they don't have to die in a terrible sandpit accident. They can just fall over and hurt themselves.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, even when you're watching your kids get hurt, like, my kid jumped off the couch and hurt his foot, and I was sitting there watching him, like, telling him, don't jump off the couch, and he still did it, and he still got hurt. So, like, even when you have your eyeballs on your children, things happen. Yeah, so I don't know why you'd let your child play in a massive sandpit like that, but that's okay.
Also, I do feel sorry for the mum though, because mm-hmm. what happens to her later?
Yeah,
because she's married to such a piece of wood, such a stone.
Terrible. Yeah, so I can understand that, but yeah. So after this, we have Roach in prison. And he's in a military cell alone with no bars, no nothing, but a bed sheet, which is never a good thing. And he keeps screaming, he's going to kill me, he's going to kill me. Why he's going to kill him now, I don't know. But I guess it's just like he knows, spent his use. I don't know. Like, he's not there to, I don't know. So he knows that he's Roach, or I keep getting Rappo and Roach mixed up. So, too similar. So, yeah. And then guess what happens? He gets killed. So, I loved Scully's line when she was walking into the prison and the guard was like, he was real worked up an hour ago. And she goes, not as worked up as I'm going to be. Like, you Scully. Tell him. And then they find the sheet shoved down his throat, which is about probably the least horrific death in this episode, maybe. I don't know. It's all horrible.
It's pretty, you can't compare. It's pretty compare. Bad, but it's...
Yeah, it's all pretty awful.
It's not as bad as basically being boiled alive or suffocated by a sand. Yeah. But
if you're going to have a way to go...
I just think that Mulder and Scully don't actually do a huge amount in this episode.
No, they don't.
And they're always like a step behind. I think that's one of the reasons why it's rated so low for me.
Mm-hmm. And it's like... They're just kind of running around. Mulder knows it's astral projection, like, right away. He nails it. And Scully, of course, is like, no, Gulf War Syndrome. Because that's her job, to be the skeptic and the scientist. And what do you think about astral projection? I feel like they could have, if the X-Files was going to do an episode about astral projection, I would have liked it to be better than this. Because I think astral projection is really cool. And I like the idea of somebody murdering people without being in their bodies. That's really creepy. I just feel like they didn't use it as well as they could have in this situation.
Yeah, I quite like the subject of astral projection. I think it could be a really effective X-File. I agree with you. And I think the idea that somebody could project out of their body when they themselves are immobilized because of a disability is a really effective mm-hmm. idea. I just think this is totally the wrong vehicle for it.
Yeah.
But there are certain things that are really problematic in this episode. So astral projection does not mean you can magically make doors lock.
Yeah.
You know, or that you can throw a man across the room. Like, are you stronger because you're astrally projected? I mean, I'm not sure you are.
Yeah.
Or you can cause a lift to stop working. Like, how does he get the lift to stop working?
Yeah.
I mean, it just means you can project your physical body into, mm-hmm. like, a projection, right?
Mm-hmm.
Into, like, a physical form elsewhere.
As far as I understand it, all astral projection actually is that you can leave your body and go somewhere else. It doesn't necessarily mean that you can appear in physical form, although I think it's supposedly possible. But it's more like that you can just make yourself go other places than your body. So it's more like walking outside of your body. Like, I mean, at least the episode The Walk is appropriately titled because, you know, he's just leaving his physical body and going other places.
But, like, this could be a really scary concept, isn't it? I mean, if you think about Squeeze in Tombs, mm-hmm. who's a character who can squeeze through the tiniest space. And that is pretty terrifying. I mean, I've never looked at gratings or vents in the same way again. So that's pretty horrifying. I mean, you could have made it a bit like that, you know? I mean, he could, because if he can project anywhere.
Mm-hmm. You can get, and I would have believed it if the room was locked. And something happened within the room that nobody could explain.
Exactly. It means you can project yourself into all sorts of situations and people mm-hmm. can't really escape from you, can they?
Exactly.
So it could be a really sinister concept.
Yeah.
And they just don't do that here. I mean, the deaths are horrible, but they're kind of like... I just feel like it's like a kind of grim. It's grim mm-hmm. and it's upsetting and it's kind of horrible with no sort of payoff or any sort of justification, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I wonder how it would have played if you had something like Roach's death be the instigating factor. And he dies in this locked room and the sheet is like shoved all the way down his throat. Like, how did that happen? Like, he maybe, you know, something like along those lines. And then you've got this locked room in a secure facility and you got to figure out what happened, like work backward from there, you know, something like that. But I mean, I can understand killing the families and that would make someone want to die if you lost your whole family in a fire, something horrific like that. But I don't understand how he compels people to kill themselves but then doesn't let them die. Like, I think
he just prevents people from dying by, like, turning off the hot water mm-hmm. or removing whatever they're trying to kill themselves with. And I think the one reason why he couldn't prevent the guy I think you're supposed to think the guy who threw himself into a wood chipper has done that as a last resort. Like, he's tried to kill himself multiple times and been stopped. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's no way to sort of put a man back together again after he's been put into a wood chipper, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I think that was the one death he couldn't prevent, because there's no way to prevent that, really.
Right.
Whereas he can prevent the guy from boiling himself to death by turning down the water heating and leaving the door open so the firemen can get in. And
but how do you
so
not die instantly from that? I mean,
you probably would, to be honest.
That doesn't. I mean, you have searing boiling water in your lungs. That doesn't make sense to me. Yeah.
A good setup would be, you know, having Roach be like his best friend, and then Roach actually killing himself, or not, maybe not Roach, but somebody killing himself in the beginning. An actual legitimate suicide, someone who is very depressed because of PTSD or because of, like, they can't escape the experiences that they had during the war, killing himself, and then that leaving Rappo sort of alone in the hospital, and Rappo's so upset that his best friend's killed himself in the veterans hospital that he then decides to go on a case of revenge. Or, I mean, you don't even have to show the suicide. The suicide could have happened before the episode starts, and it's like the aftermath of this. Do you mean like it has to be, the revenge has to be more than just I came back from war scarred. I don't know.
Exactly.
I just feel like someone close to him's got to have died, or he's got to have lost something important to him.
Right.
There is this really funny quote in it though, that when Mulder is talking about astral projection, Scully's like, "That's crazy." Mulder says, "Sometimes the only sane response to an insane world is insanity." And I was like, well, that's definitely a quote for 2016, 2017, 2018.
Absolutely. I thought the exact same thing. I was like, Mulder, you nailed it, man. I just need to put that on my wall. Just remember that.
I was like, it's been a couple of insane years, really, hasn't it?
Right. Oh, man.
And I was thinking that he was saying that back in the 90s. And I was like,
yeah.
I mean, what a simpler time.
Seriously.
All we had to worry about was astral projection.
When astral projection was the scariest thing you can think of. Yeah. Good times. There was one moment that I really liked when they were interviewing Rappo, and he said something like, don't you think if I could get out of my body, I'd rather do something else besides kill people? And he gives Scully a look, and Mulder like steps in front of him. I was like, Mulder, protecting your Scully girl from the gross nasty man. That made me happy.
It's good that Mulder confronts him. I think that, I mean, Trimble does have a point about soldiers being forgotten after war. I do think that is the case. I do think veterans, especially veterans suffering from something that's psychological as a result, like psychological trauma as a result of war, I think they can be overlooked, they can be forgotten. But Mulder does have a point when confronting Trimble. Like, he's like, you're a soldier. This is what you signed up for.
Right.
You know, and now you're just complaining because you're feeling sorry for yourself. And Trimble's a poor villain. He just seems too smarmy. He's too self-pitying. He sees himself as a victim. And he basically constantly feels sorry for himself, and he hates everybody, and he's unpleasant to everyone. And I think that makes it really hard to sympathize with him. I was really looking forward to him being smothered by a pillow.
I know. Yeah. It's like, oh. Yeah. My favorite villains are the ones who feel completely... I like the kinds of villains who don't necessarily... Like, I guess they feel justified or righteous, but at the same time, you can see their point of view and be like, well, if I were in that situation, I don't know if I would act the same way. I don't know if I'd be going around killing, you know, like, maybe. But you don't get that from this villain. So it's hard to really not necessarily enjoy the his evilness, but, you know, it's hard to identify. I like having somebody I can empathize with, even though they're bad, because I think that makes them personable and gives them something to... You just need something to latch onto and be able to humanize a villain is, I think, makes them a stronger character. And you don't get that with this guy at all. I think he would have been much stronger had we had something. And you know, not having any kind of connection to the people he's actually going after. Like you said before, if the general had given an order that this thing went wrong or something like that, it just would have made a whole bunch of difference, and it wouldn't have taken much to do that either. So it's disappointing, because I think it could have been a pretty strong episode if just a couple of little things had changed. But yeah, that's not what we got, unfortunately. We got this one. So I mean, they find, after he gets a pillow over his head, is that Stan's doing that? And then he tries to get Callahan with the steam, and we see the thing running at him through the steam, and we get some Mulder narration at the end. I miss the Mulder, I miss the wrap-up case files stuff.
Before before Colonel Stans suffocates Trimble, there's General Callahan is at home and his wife is killed, and it's a really anticlimactic death, and he just seems a little bit bewildered, doesn't he, that his wife is dead,
With the creepy footprints and the bloody footprints,
and right before she's killed, she's like picking up her son's toys and sort of like, she's obviously really grieving, her son has just died, which is completely natural and normal. And he comes up and tries to comfort her in the most inappropriate way possible and says something like, you know, we'll get through this.
Stiff upper lip, dear.
And she's like, what? I don't want to get through this. Like, I've just lost my only child. I mean, I was watching this episode with my husband and both of us started laughing. My husband was like, what was that? Like, their son literally died like half a day ago, like earlier that morning. And he's like, we'll get through it, like, we'll get over it. And she looks, and even she looks at him and she's like, I don't want to get through this. I want my son back.
I can understand that she would be in shock for sure.
I was like, dude, do you not have a heart? You don't have a heart. You deserve to be, I don't know, killed with steam. You have no heart. And then when his wife does,
steam to death.
He's like, ooh, like, oh, my wife is dead. But he's more angry at the idea that he might be killed than the fact that his child and his wife are dead.
Oh, General Callahan.
So, I think that's the main problem. Well, aside from the fact that we don't really know why Trimble's doing what he's doing, I think that one of the other major problems with this episode is that the reactions to the deaths are so muted that it makes everybody walking around seem like they're all suffering from, I don't know, some sort of psychosis, like that they've all lost their ability to feel empathy. And I see that in other X-Files episodes, that sometimes, I mean, I understand Mulder and Scully are hardened investigators and they see a lot of dead bodies and they've seen a lot of horrific things, and a lot of horrific things have happened to them, so maybe that's why they are the way they are. But I mean, when I did the Kalasari, which is a season two episode, and I did it with Carl Sweeney, who also does this podcast, he was sort of saying that one of the things that he didn't like about the episode was how the death of a child is kind of inappropriately treated. So there's the death of a child, and then you don't get any of the emotional impact that has on the family. And that actually the Mulder and Scully are quite callous as investigators. And that the actual writers kind of cut out that emotional impact. So there's this horrible death of a child, and then afterwards it's sort of like never properly dealt with or explained, which he says he thinks is a bit crass, basically, and quite insensitive. And I sort of felt that a little bit with this episode. You know, it's just a set piece, isn't it? All these people dying in these awful ways. But it's kind of crass that nobody really deals with the sort of emotional fallout of all these people dying in these awful ways. And that Mulder and Scully are totally and utterly unmoved by it all.
Well, in Too Shy, the episode before this, you've got Scully interviewing the little girl after her mother dies, and she gets really emotional. That's some really solid acting from Gillian Anderson, and you can really see the emotion there for this little girl who just lost her mother. And like you said, this is just not here in this episode. So I know they're capable of it, and I know with the right script and all that. Do you think it's the scripting or the directing? Because I feel like Rob Bowman's a pretty solid director.
I think it's the script.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's the script. Because I think, I mean, it's a little bit like in Testos Bichos as well. Like, you know, they're just not emotionally invested in it. And I think it's because they know it's a stupid story.
Yeah. And Elmundo Guira, too, was pretty antiseptic as far as emotion goes. I mean, Mulder and Scully were going through the camp, the migrant camp, and all that. And there just wasn't a lot there from them. So,
I mean, doesn't Mulder even make fun of somebody's grief? Doesn't he, like jokingly act like one of the suspects at one point?
Yeah, because they think that, you know, yeah, the suspect lost the love of his life or something. He's really upset about it, and there was a scene there. So it's just, yeah, I think it's the writing. Sorry, Josh Hyman, but it's true. Clearly, maybe he should not have been left to his own devices, but I know that's mean. Sorry. As a writer, we do the best we can.
Other episodes, yeah, that are better. So,
yeah, but yeah. Those were the ones that he was credited alone. So maybe he just needs somebody to rein him in a little bit. How did you feel about that last scene when Callahan's in his office and then Colonel Stans becomes the mailman and he just sort of rolls in and they give each other a look? I'm just like, yeah, man.
Well, I felt that was the most emotional that I've seen Callahan in the whole episode. when Colonel Stans walks in and kind of hands him the mail. And
they're like, yeah, I get
Callahan's
it.
Like, mm-hmm. Callahan seems shocked that Colonel Stans is there handing him the mail. He's like, oh my God. Or maybe he's just so horrified by his face. You know,
it would
scarred
honestly
face.
Be hard not to be horrified by that. I feel sorry. I feel really bad for the man. But see, now that, well, I guess he's not dead. He doesn't die. They save him, right? At the end? No, he dies. Sorry. Scratch that. Yeah,
no,
he
Colonel
does,
Stans.
He does kill him, doesn't he? That's not...
Yeah, he does kill him.
Yeah.
I also like how Colonel Stans can just slip into the room and Scully and the nurse step
after.
Out
yeah.
for like half a second. Colonel Stans just... Like, for a big guy, he's kind of nifty. He gets in there really quick and starts suffocating.
Yep. It actually takes a while to suffocate somebody, too, so they must have been taking a long coffee break.
And I did think, like, at one point when, you know, it's obviously that Trimble is astral projecting and Scotty's, like, trying to wake him up with drugs and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm like, just slap the guy. I mean, maybe you don't want to slap somebody who's disabled. But I was like, slap him. Well, like, shake him awake.
He's trying to kill somebody. I don't really have a lot of sympathy for him.
Yeah, just give him a little quick sharp slap across the face. But I mean, I suppose she's a doctor, she can't do that. But you know, I mean, Mulder's down there chasing after, I don't know, the whole pacing at the end just seems odd. Like the guy, like General Callahan leaves and then he goes down to the basement. Well, he's in the lift, he leaves, and then Mulder goes running after him, and then it's like it's tagged on at the end.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? I don't know, it's just not. It seems weird pacing to me. It seems like very uneven. So by that point, to be honest, I was kind of...
Like, we got to figure out how to wrap this up. Let's...
yeah, exactly. I kind of phased
wrap
out.
Wrap this up, guys. Yeah. Yeah, it just is overall not a very satisfying episode. Have your feelings on the points changed at all?
I would say maybe I'm going to 4.
Yeah.
4 out of 10 now. Yeah.
I'm going to erase my ish and give it a solid 4. Yeah. Well, Clara, my dear, it's always a pleasure talking with you. And where can we find you online?
So you can find me on Twitter, at ClaraJeanMC. So I'm on Twitter, so come over and tweet me and say hello. And I'm also on a podcast called Primitive Culture for the Trek FM network. So if you like Star Trek and you're interested in how our cultures influence Star Trek, then please do head over and listen to Primitive Culture.
Excellent. I am on Twitter at Sarah L. Blair, SarahLBlair. And remember for next time, trust no one.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The X-Cast further, You can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/thexcast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/thexcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A-Y-E.